Like, I respect myself enough to take care of this body. And I also think today's video, by the way, is about your philosophy of life and making it reconcile with what you're doing. And so if my philosophy of life is that God gave me a strong body and it's my responsibility to take care of it, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance if I'm eating chocolate and drinking wine every day at 5 o'clock, because that's not consistent with what I say my philosophy is, right? So your mental health really is dependent on reconciling what you want in life and then what you do every day that either takes you in that direction or takes you in a different direction and creates that dissonance that wears on you. And stress and, you know, that sort of thing, it detracts from your health.
Welcome to the Plant-Based Curious Podcast, a place to explore and discover the plant-based and vegan lifestyle. Each week, we'll talk about our own stories and real discoveries, alongside our experts and experienced guests, about changing behaviors, whole food living, nutrition, and the amazing facts and positive curiosities about veganism. We're here for you as a guide and a place to gather resources. But with the simple click of our subscribe button, you're allowing yourself a little time and good energy to listen, laugh, and indulge in the lifestyle you may love. Please welcome your host, a certified holistic coach and plant-based lifestyle believer, Diane Randall.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Today, I'm so excited about the topic that we're going to dive into today. It's prioritizing health over sick care, and how can we advocate for ourselves? Who better to join us is Dr. Pam Popper. She's a leading voice in the field of health and wellness and the president of Wellness Forum Health. Dr. Popper, welcome to Plant-Based Curious.
Well, thank you for having me. And it is my favorite topic to talk about. And I think there's nothing more timely to talk about than this right now.
It's more timely, but before we get to the main topic, is there anything else that you want the listeners to know about you?
Well, I've had a very interesting and long career. I've been at this for 27 years, and I've appeared in documentaries, and I've written books, and I'm not saying this to brag about myself as much as I've done a lot of research in this area. I've been in practice for decades now. And so experience gives you a wide breadth of knowledge in which to talk about this. And I've seen people in the best of health and in the worst of health. And I know what leads to both of those extremes. And I hope we motivate people to want to go to that best of health end of the spectrum.
I hear what you're saying. And that's the reason I ask you if you wanted people to know more about you, because I found so many of your YouTube videos, which is how I discovered you in the first place. There's so much great information. So thank you for that. So when we look at the concept of prioritizing health over sick care, can you set the stage for our listeners? Why is this shift in perspective so crucial today?
Well, I think we've reached a place where most people know that our healthcare system is seriously deficient. You don't want to be there unless you have to be. I mean, there's a very tiny percentage of people who like hanging out with doctors, but most people don't want to do that. And so you want to endeavor to keep yourself as healthy as possible so that you need as little medical attention as possible, right? Another thing about our healthcare system is that we don't have solutions, nor does anybody, for self-abuse. In other words, this idea that you can eat, drink, and be merry and not be concerned about your health. And then when something invariably will break down, you have a heart attack, or you become diabetic, or you develop an autoimmune disease, or whatever happens, well, you're going to show up in a doctor's office and we have a fix program. We really don't. And what really would fix those things is what you should have been doing in the first place, taking care of yourself, right? So the idea that you can abuse yourself or neglect yourself, in some cases, I don't think it's abuse as much as neglect, and then somehow it all turns out happy ending, is not true. And in some conditions, for example, cancer, you know, many times people find out that they've been going down the wrong path with a catastrophic diagnosis, and you don't want to be one of those people. So let's back up the process. Let's assume this. I teach by analogy, and I tell people, listen, if you took care of your cars and your houses the way you take care of your body, can you imagine how catastrophic that would be? And so just to kind of go to the absurd, have you ever had dinner at somebody's house and it's like raining inside? And you say, well, you know, maybe you ought to check out the roof. It could need some repair. And people say, well, my kids are playing soccer, a lot of overtime at work. I mean, so we just have to let it rain inside right now. Well, nobody says that, right? It's crazy. And have you ever seen somebody drive on a flat tire for weeks and weeks? And you say, I don't know how you're getting around in that car in that condition. And you go, well, you know, it's been just crazy. My mother moved in and I've got a lot of things on my plate right now. So we're Johnny on the spot to take care of a repair in the house or something that's to the car while we neglect the most important asset we all have, which is our bodies.
So, Dr. Popper, I am so happy you said that people are catching on to the new way of treatment in America. Mm-hmm. I should say, for the most part, because I went to an integrative holistic medical doctor for like 11 years. And then, depending on insurance, I had to go back into the system, is what I call it. And I would say for 3 years, I was so miserable. I never experienced what I'm experiencing now. It felt like something was really different. I felt that the hospitals and the doctors were recruiting patients, and I didn't want to be one of them. So it really bothered me that it's either medication or some type of surgery. There's always some recommendation, mm-hmm. okay,
right,
of to come back. So it really upset me, but the big picture scared me at the same time. So as I get older, I said, I need to find someone who's really looking at me and mm-hmm. not just what my age is and what I should be taking. So I feel that I can advocate for myself for the most part. First of all, what are the consequences if you walk in to traditional hospitals or doctors and you're not equipped to mm-hmm. have conversations or speak from your power?
Right. Well, first of all, one of the things I try to do is diffuse the anger a little bit, right? And recognize that it's easy to get angry with doctors and institutions without understanding the pressures that they're under. So let's just start with this. You know, healthcare was a $4 trillion business in 2021. So we're sending ourselves into oblivion. The hospitals and medical centers are run by accountants and business people. More and more of these practices and hospitals are being bought as investments by funds. So they're looking for a return on investment. So this places downward pressure on the doctors to have short appointments during which you're not going to have much conversation about anything. And to that point, I have a good friend who's an osteopath here in Columbus who osteopathic manipulation takes 45 minutes for the first appointment. And her hospital will only give her 15 minutes. And she says, well, I can't do manipulation in 15 minutes for a first appointment. They said, well, then don't do it. So this is a typical situation where the doctor who comes off as the bad guy, and some of them are, like every profession, but a lot of times they've just been put in a situation where they can't be effective. And how this all happened was the intoxicating offer that got made by these medical institutions. We'll take care of everything. You won't have to worry about rent and payroll and buying equipment. It's, you know, it's all on us. And then when they got caught up in the system, here they are dependent on them for income and everything else. So that's the reason why you need to be prepared. The second thing is that doctors increasingly have to practice according to guidelines set by others. And the system is very perverse. I don't know if you saw my video on Medicare reimbursement, but it's what happens is that there's a disincentive for the doctor to actually cure the patient. So let's say, for example, you're my doctor and I have 5 diseases. All right. Okay. So the reimbursement rate is set for those 5 diseases. And Medicare records me as being medicated for those things. So you say, Pam, there's no reason for you to have type 2 diabetes. I mean, come on, we've got research showing you can reverse it in 21 days. And we can, right? So you show me what to do in your limited time. You send me home with lots of stuff to read and go watch Forks Over Knives. And sure enough, I start eating better. And not only does my diabetes go away, but my blood pressure comes down. So now I'm not taking 2 medicines or more maybe, but I don't have 2 diseases. So Medicare lowers the reimbursement rate and marks you off as a bad physician because your patients are not compliant on their medication. And this is the perverse incentives in medicine are amazing. Now you would be the exception because most doctors don't get much nutrition training or whatever. So it's usually pretty happenstance that the doctor knows anything about what we're talking about. So that's a big problem. But so all of these things are set forth. Okay. So if you're 50 years old, you're told to get a colonoscopy. And if you're 45, it's time to get your first mammogram. And if you're this, you have to get that. And so the question is are any of these things valuable? All right. So it's important for the consumer to know what to say no to and what to say yes to. And an informed consumer can keep from being hurt. So one of the things we practice in my office all the time is repeat after me as many times as it takes till it rolls off your tongue. Thank you so very much. Now, we're assuming not emergency, right? But thank you so much for the recommendation. I'm going to be doing some research on this. And if you have anything that you think I should read, I'll be happy to take it home with me. I will get back to you in a while and let you know what my decision is. Now, let's go over that until it just flies right off the tongue and you feel real comfortable saying it. And then you get the heck out of there and look into it. And what happens when people start doing that is they say things like, I looked into this DEXA scan and what it tells me is that I'm aging. And my gosh, if I'm so stupid, I don't know I'm getting older. I got bigger problems than my parent. We're talking about really, really, I don't know what to say about that. Right? So no, I'm not going to get the DEXA scan. And mammograms don't reduce my risk of dying of breast cancer. And the randomized controlled trial, first one ever published on colonoscopy, showed that it does not reduce my risk of colorectal cancer. So they start saying no to the things that are potentially harmful and almost always useless. And that is the best way to protect yourself. And 95% of all decisions about healthcare are made in non-emergency situations where a person certainly has the chance, you know, to look into it before consenting to something. And by the way, this is the way people buy houses and cars. I've never heard of anybody standing in the driveway saying, I'm so stupid about real estate, you're just going to have to tell me where to live. Or I'm an idiot about cars, so I'll let you tell me what to drive. I'll sign anything you put in front of me and drive out of the parking lot with it, right? We expect to have to do these things in other areas of our lives.
Well, it's so great that you gave an example of how we can be in a doctor's office and take a pause on the recommendation and thank the doctor. I think that's so needed because I can tell you I had an experience where the approach was, this is something you really need.
Right. And that's compelling to hear, right?
Yes.
You know, it almost can scare you. Like, what happens if I don't do it? What if I could die on the way home? I mean, I don't know, but it sounds dire, right?
I learned that through experience with a biopsy, breast biopsy. And I learned after the fact that I was really gaslighted into it because my doctor was like, I'm so afraid for you.
Oh, gosh.
And then I'm like, okay, I'm not a doctor because I rejected it all. And then I decided to go there and get the breast biopsy, which was the most violent, brutal thing I've ever seen in my life, really, for something that was non-life-threatening.
Right.
After that, I did my research and learned from that experience. But it was very, very brutal that women have to go through that just to get a test. I didn't have a lump or anything. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I felt if I stay in this system, I'm going to become a patient with all the things I know, but it's so scary. Mm-hmm. And with that said, how can we advocate for ourselves in our daily lives so that we don't end up in the hospital, so that we're confident that we are healthy? And that maybe we don't need all these tests just because.
Right. Well, that's a really good question. And I think the first thing is I'm 67 years old. So I'm old enough to remember when I was a kid. I am. Can you believe it? And I'm still working like 20 hours a day and going like a mad woman.
I wouldn't have ever thought that. You look
awesome. I feel
great.
I've got the energy of a 20-year-old.
You must be plant-based.
I think so. That's the reason why. But when I was a kid, we had a family doctor. And the first thing about the situation was everybody had insurance back then. Health insurance was a thing.
Right.
But you only visited a doctor when something was wrong, not to hang out with doctors like we do right now. Like, people go to the doctor all the time. I say, are you lonely? Or like, what's driving this behavior? Right. And it was out of, you paid out of pocket unless it was something catastrophic. Again, using the car analogy or the house, if my gutters need replaced, my insurance company is not going to pay for that. And when the oil has to be changed, the auto insurance company is not going to pay for it. I have to pay for those things, right? And so had my mother called our family doctor and said, I think I'll bring the girls over this afternoon. He would have said, are they sick? And no. And Eleanor, is there something wrong? I mean, he was starting to question her mental capacity, right? You don't have something better to do today. So at that point in time, diets were different. Kids played outside. I mean, I like to tell people my sister and I were at large in the neighborhood. We disappeared in the morning.
Yeah.
Riding our bikes and all that kind of stuff. And
right,
we went home
right.
And we got hungry. And then we disappeared again for the rest of the time. And when we came home from school, you ate something for a snack and then you're back outside doing something again, right? So that's the way it used to be. Doctors were for sick people. Hospitals were for sick people. You didn't hang out with doctors. And this whole business of hanging out with doctors and then we do this incessant testing and then we find things early. Well, that sounds good, but there's a very big difference between sound reasoning and sound science. Because all of this early detection, what it's actually resulted in is that risk factors for disease, it's been a very gradual pivot, but risk factors for disease are now treated as if you have the disease. So we have pre-diabetes and pre-hypertension and pre-this and pre-that. These are all manufactured by drug companies and medical centers because they profit from treating people who are healthy while they help them get sick. So to your point of saying you knew that you felt like you were going to get herded into being a patient if you continued this, you're absolutely right. That's the goal, right? So there are some things that you want to do. I tell women between the ages of 30 and 60, good to get a pap test every 3 to 5 years. We do too much of it, but that's the one test that will reduce your risk of dying of cervical cancer. So that's a good idea. If something is wrong, you go have it checked out. I mean, if I had a headache and it didn't go away in a couple of weeks, I think I'd want to find out what's going on. So you don't want to be
absolutely,
you know, to go to the extremes. But other than that, instead of all this time with doctors, you start focusing all that time and energy and money on taking care of yourself, right? And so now we get into one of the biggest objections, I don't have time. All right, so here's the answer to that, right? Every time I've ever had somebody in my office who had a serious thing happen, they've been diagnosed with cancer, they had a heart attack, or and the family is often involved in this at this point in time. There is no amount of time that is too much to address the issue. Drop everything. I've seen people quit their jobs. I've seen people rearrange their family life because mom has cancer or whatever. Well, if you're willing to do it because you have cancer, why aren't you willing to do it so that you don't get cancer? Wouldn't that be a good thing, right? So you have taking responsibility.
You know what I say to that question, because I've heard it so much, is, okay, do you have time for diabetes? Do you have time for heart disease?
Well, I was going to say, this goes to time management. I'm actually teaching a class on time management as part of my weekend retreats, and I'm going to teach it as a single unit in January because it's by popular demand, but you just have to organize your time. And you have to learn how to be respectful of your responsibilities while doing the things that you need to do. So this is another one where we repeat and rehearse until it rolls right off the tongue. I would love to help you with that, but I won't be able to do it until after yoga class on Wednesday night. So I'll be over at 7:30. Okay. I'll share something with you that's kind of funny. So my assistant scheduled Optimal Health with Pam. I teach this every fall, part one and part two. So she schedules it to start at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, having forgotten that the farmer's market moves indoors and it starts at 9. So I think I'm going to have to move that to 10:30. She goes, okay, I'll go on ahead and do that. I'll just tell them we've had a time change, but I won't tell them why. I said, well, I'm going to tell them why. All right. So we get on to this question. I said, I know that you guys got an email this week from Kelly saying we moved this to 10:30. And I want to tell you why that is. I go to the farmer's market at 9 o'clock on Saturday. Every Saturday that it's open, which is all except for holidays, and that moves outdoors and it's 8 in the summertime, but it's 9 o'clock indoors. And I'm very particular about the food that I eat, and I have to go to the farmer's market. So I could not start this class at 10 o'clock. So we moved it to 10:30. And this is your first lesson in learning how to deal with what it takes to take care of yourself. I said, was anybody going to ask for the money back because of 10:30 start time? No, you're all here, right? So the only thing that would have been awful is if I agreed to skip the farmer's market so I could be with you all, and then that starts affecting my health adversely. So it's really a matter of learning how to schedule yourself and to make time to do things. And I say all the time, I would love to talk about that. My workout's at 9 o'clock. At 9:45, I'll call you. Okay. Can't you do it? Actually, I can't. If you need to do it earlier, I can do it earlier on Friday, because I don't do a workout on Friday. I go to yoga at 5:30. So, you know, that's a better day. And once people do that a few times, they start to get comfortable with it and realize that taking care of myself is no different. If you had an accountant, if you had an appointment with your accountant and you're going to have to pay for the time if you didn't show up, you would say, I'd be happy to meet with you. I'll be back for my accountant's appointment at noon, right? But because it's a fuzzy thing, like I've scheduled myself to run or whatever, easy to give that up. Don't do that, all right? You take care of yourself first, and then you have so much else you can give to the world.
It's about making yourself a priority, because we're all, especially women, we've been socialized to think of everyone else for the most part.
Right.
But I do believe that's changing. I really do. But you have to think of yourself as a priority.
Right.
And set boundaries around that.
And you also have to get over this excuse of I'm busy. I mean, once in a while, yeah, I can be a little sarcastic. People will say, you don't know how busy I am. And I'll say, well, you know, the reason I can work out, I don't have anything to do. So thankfully, the workouts and the yoga classes fill up the time. Otherwise, I'd be staring at the wall. I mean, come on, everybody's busy, right?
So, we could all say that, but right, what is your priority is really, right, really what I'm hearing you say, right, is
exactly. Exactly, and nobody suffers, and your body thanks you every day, and then you can do so much more for everybody else if you really care about people. And I think you and I do, and anybody watching this, I'm sure does. Compassionate people tend to be drawn to this type of thing anyway. So if you care about people, yes, and you want to have the most to offer, you take care of yourself, and then you have the most to offer for the longest period of time of your life.
Now, we know that nutrition plays a key role in all of this. So how can adopting a plant-based diet contribute to this shift toward prioritizing health?
This is where everybody's got a point of view about diet. And when science became, and when it became acceptable to talk about science from a point of view instead of evidentiary standards, I think that was a step in the wrong direction, right?
Right.
So one of the first things we teach people is how to read scientific information so that they're not taken by a single study that shows something. I mean, there's a study to show anything. You know, if you want to eat chocolate for lunch, there's a study that shows that'll help you lose weight. Gosh, I wish that was true. But anyway, I digress. Wish that one had worked out. But you have to start looking at what are some of the common characteristics of long-lived people throughout the world. They all eat a plant-based diet. They're not vegan, but it's mostly plants, and it's low in fat. And they're not living on toaster pastries and cheeseburgers and french fries and fast food. And even fast food, I remember when the first McDonald's was built near my house when I was a kid. But the hamburger was this big and the french fries.
It sure was.
Yeah. So even if you ate fast food every day, you couldn't hurt yourself with it from a weight perspective, you know?
We only got it maybe one day a week on a Sunday or something. It was a treat.
Yeah. It was good to grow up in a poor family because we couldn't afford to eat all the stuff that's bad for you.
Yes, I agree with that one.
Yeah, I mean, that part of the problem is that diseases of affluence, people can afford to abuse themselves. But if you look at these long-lived people, they're all lean. They eat a plant-based, low-fat diet, mostly, you know, pretty close to whole foods, minimally processed foods, and they live for a very long time. But what's even more important is they live well. In other words, we have some longevity in this country, but if you take a look at how many older people finish their lives living in nursing homes, and I don't want to end up like that. I get really inspired by centenarians, by the way. I'll share a couple of my favorite stories with you. One newspaper I subscribed to did a story on this guy. For his 106th birthday, he dove off of his son's boat in a lake wearing a bathing suit.
Wow.
He took up horseback riding on his 102nd birthday. Can you imagine starting to ride horses at that age, right?
That's phenomenal.
A 94-year-old, what I just recently read, this 94-year-old guy bought a barbershop. And so his family was saying, are you nuts? He goes, always wanted to own a barbershop. And this one came up for sale. And I just decided, well, gosh, I've got time on my hands and some money. So I'm gonna have my own barbershop. And so he's cutting hair and having a blast, right? So you contrast that. And by the way, all these centenarian pictures, these people are lean and fit. They're physically active, right? They're enjoying life, which is part of how they stay lean and fit. And they all say the same things. They don't tell you the reason I'm 106 or whatever is because I dutifully went to all my doctor's appointments and all that.
Right.
They say, you know, I have a great life. My family life is great. I have wonderful friends. I've always eaten well. I have a career I love. There's a guy here in Ohio, by the way, who's 100 years old and still teaching at a medical school. And his wife is only 83. She's a psychiatrist and she's still in practice, but they're real passionate about life and they obviously take care of themselves. And you can see it in their physical presence. They're lean and they're strong. They're physically strong, you know? So that's, if you want to end up like that, and I don't know anybody who doesn't really, well, then you have to follow the habits of those people. They eat a plant-based diet. They're physically active. They pay attention to their social life and their family life and their communities. And they have reasons to live. They like living, right? So that's the recipe.
That is the recipe. And that is what, if people are listening, you need to incorporate into your life for
yes.
long-term health and well-being. That is so fascinating. My dad is 90 years old, and I feel grateful to have him as an inspiration, lifting weights, walking, eating fairly healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is not a frail man, and I just love him as an example of, mm-hmm. of what to do as you get older. I love having women or men around me or just access to these people so I can see what are they doing, because mm-hmm. I'm so curious about that. And it really boils down to what you were saying, diet, mm-hmm. loving life, and just being engaged. Mm-hmm. So that is just so beautiful. So health isn't just about being physical. It includes mental well-being. How does prioritizing health extend to mental health? And what practices or approaches do you recommend for holistic well-being?
Well, I think, first of all, our vision of ourself is somewhat based on how we treat ourselves. You know,
yes.
as is everything, the way we treat everything. Like, I like for my house to look nice. I like for the front yard to be in good shape. I like when somebody comes over, and who wouldn't, right? And says, oh my gosh, your backyard looks like a city park. You must love it here. I like when people come into our office and they say, oh my gosh, what a welcoming place. Everything is so nice here. It smells so good in the kitchen, you know? So we really expect that our outer appearance of everything, including our bodies, is a reflection of how we feel about those things and our bodies, right? So you have to have a good feeling about yourself, and you have to have self-respect. Like, I respect myself enough to take care of this body. And I also think today's video, by the way, is about your philosophy of life and making it reconcile with what you're doing. And so if my philosophy of life is that God gave me a strong body and it's my responsibility to take care of it, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance if I'm eating chocolate and drinking wine every day at 5 o'clock, because that's not consistent with what I say my philosophy is, right? So your mental
right.
health really is dependent on reconciling what you want in life and then what you do every day that either takes you in that direction or takes you in a different direction and creates that dissonance that wears on you. And stress and, you know, that sort of thing detracts from your health. You know, Gabor Maté, if you've read any of his stuff, I watched
yes.
a video.
Yes.
We're covering one of his books, yeah. An Advanced Study, in January. But he was talking about like the stress that people feel in their relationships and with their themselves and their objectives is a big determinant of your physical health.
It really is. I just finished his book, The Myth of Normal, a couple of months ago.
I'm reading that now. Oh my
yeah.
gosh, I was reading it at lunchtime. It's fabulous.
It's fabulous. It really is. I'm just a person who loves to read, loves to try to understand what's out there in terms of holistic or non-toxic things so that I can learn and understand. I don't think you ever get to the point where you have everything, but I'm always trying to learn more and more and more. So not only for me to share, but to apply to my own life. What do you say to people that are so detached from their bodies? Because like you said, that's when things sneak up on you, because you're downing junk and crap and alcohol all the time. You're so detached from your body that you don't recognize that you're really causing harm. What do you say to people like that?
Well, when people like that are talking to me, it's usually because they have a problem they want to solve. And I've always tried to use the objective somebody's looking for and work backwards from that as a motivator to get them to go in a different direction. And we have a psychologist on staff who teaches a lot of classes, and I often refer people to those classes. But I often refer people to our psychologist to work through what has happened to you that has caused you to be so disconnected from yourself and to lose so much respect for yourself, right? And it's usually a whole series of life experiences. And as Dr. Matei says, sometimes going back to when you were a very little child, you might not even remember what happened. But good psychologists who practice cognitive therapy can sometimes help people reconcile that so that they start to believe that they're important and it's worth it to maintain their bodies, gain some self-respect and that sort of thing. But I think the biggest motivator is if you're sick and tired of the way it is, then you have to do something different for that situation to change. So if you don't like being overweight and diabetic, you can't keep doing what you've been doing to become overweight and diabetic. We have to go in a different direction. But there are a lot of people who are very disconnected from self and, again, have grown up in this system. I'm old enough to remember when it was different. But if you're 30 years old, you're not old enough to remember when it was different. You think at the age of 30 that hanging out with doctors is the thing to do. And you've been doing that.
Right. Deeply. Absolutely.
Right. And it starts when, look at what we do with babies. Babies go to a pediatrician every 3 months to get their shots. So they grow up hanging out with doctors. And so we have a few generations that have been doing that. And it's a terrible, terrible message. Hang out at the produce section, and then you won't need so many doctors, right?
Absolutely. And I really thank you for your wisdom and your insight. You've really helped me to confirm some of the thoughts that I had about what my experience has been in thinking that I'm being recruited some kind of way. So that is really great. And that's certainly where we're going to wrap up. And Dr. Popper, is there any final thoughts, advice for our listeners on taking on this journey of prioritizing their health over sick care? We talked about many things.
I'll just mention this. You know, many times when I'm speaking with younger people, they'll say, oh, I don't want to live to be 100. I hope somebody hits me with a bus when I'm 80, you know. And I think that that's, I've had this said, you know, and I think part of it is because we've watched older people get older in our country without very good health, being confined to nursing homes and that sort of thing. But when somebody says that to me, I tell them, you know what? I've dealt with people of all ages, including some people in their 80s and early 90s. And if they're diagnosed with a serious disease, they're making deals with God, because as it turns out, you know, it's pretty nice on this planet. And I don't know about you, but I want to stay here as long as I can. And so the 88-year-old person is often saying, I'll do anything. I don't want to die right now. Okay. So you think when you're young, you can have this very reckless idea about aging and you don't want to do it. And maybe you got a lot of bad ideas about it by watching friends and family who haven't done it very gracefully. But trust me, I'm 67 years old. I think I'm just getting started. All right. I have another 30 years to make trouble out there for the healthcare system and do things and live life and all that sort of thing. And so I think you'll feel that way. And the question is, when you get to be this age, are you going to be in a position to do the things that you have the maturity and wisdom to do? Because I, like a lot of people, was an idiot when I was younger, got smarter as I aged. And so now I really have something to offer. I want to stick around and do it. So all this to say, the most important thing God gave you was your body. If you don't take care of it, there's no place for you to live on this planet. All right. And you don't get to enjoy
no place for you.
Spectacular stuff. So
no place for you to live. And that is so true, because I think the bottom line as we get older is I want to be healthy as I can be to get through this life.
Yes.
No matter how old I am. I think that is the key for me, and probably most everyone that's listening feels
the
same way.
But you jumping off a boat together when we're 106. How about that?
That's right. So you've certainly given us some wonderful insight into what we can do to prioritize health and, you know, overcome this sick care. And also you've given us steps and tips on how to advocate for ourselves. So when we find ourselves in a position in a doctor's office, we have that courage and that wisdom to advocate for ourselves in a kind way. So I love what you said on the show today. So I really want to thank you, Dr. Popper, for sharing your expertise and insights with us today. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this thought-provoking episode of Plant-Based Curious. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and stay tuned for more empowering conversations. Until next time, live well and thrive. Thank you so much, Dr. Popper, for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Plant-Based Curious podcast. We really hope you've enjoyed our discoveries, experiences, and resources about the plant-based vegan lifestyle. Remember to click that subscribe button so you can join in on our future conversations. Until next time, allow yourself a little time and good energy.